All right, let's bring her on. Good morning, Themis.
Good morning.
Good morning, good morning.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good, good, good. There's so much that we want to talk about. Let's start with the housing market. You made some really interesting points about the month of August, how it saw a 6% decline in single-family house sales compared with just a year ago. People will say that, well, yeah, that's because people are moving out of the state. Is there any relation between the two?
Of course there are. And if you talk to any realtor in this state, and not now, a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, they will all tell you the same thing, that people are leaving and the people that are here are having trouble selling their homes. And there's a range of home prices that have been easier to sell, but any home that's worth any value has been very difficult to sell. And I go back to not this past election in 2018, but in 2 years before that, in 2016, we were at a Connecticut Realtors legislative breakfast the month before the election, and they did it by region, and this one happened to be New Haven and Middlesex County. So in New Haven and Middlesex County, there's probably 20 legislators there, and they all almost happen to be the leaders in the legislature. And there's probably 350 realtors there, which I've never seen in my entire career. And when we started taking questions from the audience, one of the realtors said, as you can imagine, what are you going to do in this state? We're overtaxed, we're overborrowed, we're overregulated, fill in the blank. People are leaving. And one of the legislators said, who happened to be the chairman of the Appropriations Committee at the time, don't worry. People are leaving, but more people are coming back in. We're fine. And I have never been at a legislative breakfast where a legislator, who is otherwise a nice person, mm-hmm. but it was the policy and the opinion she was espousing, got booed. And, you know, I have two responses to that. One, that's not true. But the people that are coming back, we are losing higher-income people.
Yes.
And they're being replaced with lower-income people. And that means that our tax base is eroding.
By plenty.
Themis, we've mentioned that many times before, where you look at the population of the state just a few years ago and compare it to modern day, you know, today's population. And they say, well, there's really not much of a difference. So all these people that you say are leaving, Gary, really aren't leaving. And it's, well, that's not necessarily true. There's people moving in here, but they're not of the same income level. There's more takers. The givers are moving away. And sure, we're having people move to Connecticut, but they're the takers, you know?
You know, beyond that, Gary, it's even if they're not people who, you know, I mean, you may, I assume you're talking about people that are on maybe on state assistance or need benefits from the state. There are people that are making less money, which means the state of Connecticut are getting less taxes. The tax base is eroding. And let's just go back how many years. We used to have 6 congressmen in Connecticut. Okay, we've only had 5 for several years now.
Mm-hmm.
This has been eroding for a very long time, and there's a reason it's been eroding. It's been eroding because people cannot afford to live here. They cannot afford to retire here. Their kids cannot afford to come back here because there are no jobs for them to get, and they can't afford a place to live. You know, it's very simple concepts, and it is a beautiful place. We all love Connecticut if we live here. But why would you, A, if you can't afford to live here, stay? You have no choice, okay? So there's no choice there. But the people who can't afford it, the people of more comfortable means, why would you pay so many extra taxes when you can live in another state 6 months in a day and not pay those state income taxes, for example, or different estate taxes or inheritance taxes? You wouldn't. You would be considered a bad business person if you did.
I would like to ask you a question. I have a lot of respect for you. And the thing that I can't understand is we have seen this go on and on and on, and it has for a long time. And something has to be done. Something has to be done. And can't we do it? Can't we actually do it and start moving ourselves ahead again? What do you think?
Well, listen, if I didn't think we could do it, I wouldn't still be running for office. You know, we can't do it with the type of budget that was passed this year that first of all raised taxes $1.7 billion. Okay, we can't do it with that because people can't afford that. We can't do it with a budget that was passed this year that took $170 million, raided the Special Transportation Fund to plug another hole. And then tell you that's why we need tolls to stick their hands in your pockets more. We can't do it with those kind of budgets. We can't do it with budgets that as of October 1st raise taxes, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. And taxes that hurt the middle class, that hurt the people that are counting their pennies the most, that hurt the elderly, that hurt people that are living month to month, paycheck to paycheck. We can't do it that way. We can only do it with a reasonable and responsible budgeting process, with difficult choices, with a vision for the state of Connecticut, not a vision that only goes out 1 month, which is what our budgets have been doing lately.
There are some elected Democrats that say, well, we didn't raise taxes. Oh, and by the way, this year, the Republicans didn't even come forward with a budget.
Well, you know, Gary, you served up there with us for a while, and we certainly miss you, and your district misses you.
Thank you.
But I will say this. Minority parties don't typically put out budgets because they're not ever looked at. We, as a minority party in Connecticut, since 2007, felt it was important for us to put out our proposals, and it's not just enough to say, we don't agree with yours, but here's what we think is better. So I've been very proud of doing that for the past 10 years, including 2 years ago, in 2017, when, as you know, we did about 15 different budgets.
Yeah, I remember,
In an 11-month period.
Yeah.
And in September of 2017, the Republicans in the House and Senate in Connecticut passed a minority party budget, which we believe is the first one to have been passed by a minority party, Republican or Democrat, in the United States of America. And we're very proud of that. But here's the problem. That only happened, and the bipartisan budget that resulted from that only happened because there was a tie in the Senate and a 4-vote difference in the House. Because the Democrats, for the first time in 40 years, were forced to sit at a table and listen to what we had to say. Mm. We go back to this year with the composition of the House and the Senate and a Democrat governor, and they had no interest in what we had to say. We put out proposals and alternatives on minimum wage, on paid family medical leave, on everything you can imagine, and they didn't even give it a second look. So this notion that we didn't put out a full-fledged budget this year is shameful on their part because they had no interest in it, and including the governor, who claims to have an open-door policy, and he does. You can talk to him anytime. You can call him. You can text him. But he is also the governor, the leader of the state of Connecticut. That means it is his obligation to sit people down, Republicans, Democrats, call meetings, try and figure it out, and that never happened till the middle of June when session was over, when he couldn't get a toll proposal through. He didn't care about it when we were doing the budget. He didn't care about it on the minimum wage bill. He didn't care about it on a paid family leave bill, which is actually a mandatory payroll tax, whether that you have no choice of getting in or out of or ever using, you still have to pay it. So, you know, these words that they use, it's funny. They can't defend their policies substantively, so they just say, well, nah, they didn't do a full budget. Okay, did you listen to any of our proposals or care? No.
You know, you mentioned tolls a moment ago. We're going to go there in a second. But since you brought up Governor Ned Lamont, can you compare him? How does he compare to his predecessor, Governor Malloy?
You know, I had mentioned the other day that Governor Malloy was a caustic-type man. He was difficult to deal with, Republican or Democrat. You know, anybody will tell you that. He is his people skills were not the easiest and not the most effective. Governor Lamont is a nice guy. Mm. You know, I've always been able to talk to him in regards to, you know, anything he wanted to talk about. He's not that kind of governor. He's a nice guy. The problem is I don't happen to agree with his policies. And when you look at things, whether they are he ran for office and said he only supported trucks-only tolls.
Right.
He gets into office, he goes, oh, I didn't realize how bad the situation was. Well, my cat knew how bad the situation was. I mean, you don't have to be, you know, a financial expert to understand that. So then he changed the tune with that. And that whole tolls proposal from day one in January, you know, was a series of missteps. He has contradicted his commissioners one after the other time after time. You know, there has been a series of missteps. So substantively on policy, I have not agreed with him. How he's run the office and how they've run the office, I think, and listen, it's not my opinion. It's, you've seen editorials from all the papers in the state. There's been a series of missteps. I just don't think it has been a responsible way to run state government.
Well, he's been in office for almost 10 months, and he obviously he's never held a elected office in the past, and I think he's also learning that he's got a lot to contend with, not just from Republicans, but even from Democrats, from his own party. There seems to be a struggle or a disconnect.
I think that, you know, in our quest in this country, the direction seems to be we don't like that word. We use politicians. Mm. Well, I think that it is important for people to have real world experience to bring to their elected office. But I think it's also important for people to have governmental experience to some extent so they know how it works. I mean, you can't walk in a building and not know where the bathroom is and then try and put together a multi-million-dollar budget and try and fix a $3 billion deficit.
That's a great point.
You know, so he seemed to be the most concerned, if you heard him say many times, we got a budget done on time. Well, okay, so big deal. It had a budget that raided the Special Transportation Fund. It was a budget that increased taxes. Now, they will tell you there were no new taxes, which actually is not true. But whether you got a new tax on something, for example, this grocery tax, or the taxes you already have got increased, do you care? There is more money taken out of your pocket at the end of the day than you had in the morning. Mm-hmm. The end.
Yeah, it's true.
Nobody cares about these nuances and wordsmithing and you know, explaining it in a different way. You have less money in your pocket at the end of the day after this budget than you had when it started. And if they have their way, you will have even less money because they would like to pass tolls.
Wow.
Well, referring to tolls, I mean, he said he's learned all this. He's got all this new information when it comes to the budget and funding our highways and byways and our bridges and tunnels and so on and so forth. And that he misspoke and that he didn't mean he thought it was going to be just trucks. But now that he's gotten into the office, he needs to tax or toll all vehicles. We've heard in the past that 25 to 30% of those vehicles are out of staters, and you know, 75% would be those who live in our state would be inflicted with this. And that he puts out a convincing convincing information to the public that we need to have tolls. We need to have tolls if you want to have safe transportation, highways and bridges and tunnels. But in fact, we've heard the opposite. We've heard also that you don't need to raise implement tolls in order to have our safe travels, right?
Right. You know, I said this to somebody the other day. My mom likes to watch that show, Judge Judy.
Yeah.
and I know she didn't make up this phrase, but she uses it very often. She said, "Don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining." Okay. So they can tell you all they want. That, you know, if you don't want to fall into a bridge when you drive over it, if you don't want the roads to crumble underneath you, we need to pass tolls. What they're not telling you is there are other options. We put forth other options, which is interesting because going back to they didn't do their own budget. For the past 4 years, we've put out an alternative transportation funding plan that they have absolutely no interest in and have actually mocked for 4 years, number one. Number two, you don't go and raid $170 million out of the current decently funded transportation fund, okay? Decently funded, and then tell people, but the only way to do it is by putting tolls in. You don't, as the governor did earlier this session, put out your budget that takes money out of the Special Transportation Fund, a funding source that Republicans and Democrats passed 2 years ago in the bipartisan budget that Governor Malloy signed, that put money after money in for the next 3 years, continuing, it started 2 years ago, that would have funded the Special Transportation Fund 3 years from now over $500 million, and cut that in your budget to stick that money somewhere else and then tell me and tell you that they need tolls, it's the only way to do it. It's contradictory. It is hypocritical. And it's most importantly not being honest with the people of the state of Connecticut, because let's be honest, Connecticut is worth fighting for, mm-hmm. and we are doing that. But they will tell you the only way to do it is to take more money out of your pocket, and that's not the only way.
And the sad thing, Themis, is that there are people, there are constituents that say, well, geez, I wasn't for tolls, but you know, I want safe travels when I'm traveling throughout our state, so maybe we do need them. They are disseminating inaccurate and false information, and they do it year after year, and people believe them. I need to switch gears with you really quickly because we're running out of time. Let's talk a little bit about this grocery tax. I hear now the Governor Lamont is kind of backpedaling a little bit and made a few concessions. Can you speak to that?
In the budget that we've been talking about on and off this morning, one of the parts of the budget was to take the prepared food tax. Now remember, when you go into a supermarket and you buy an already made sandwich, let's use that as an example, you pay 6.35% sales tax on it, mm-hmm. as opposed to other groceries in the store that there is no sales tax. And the reason for that was in 2002 when prepared foods became a much bigger deal in stores, so they thought it was a parity issue. So if you go into McDonald's and you get a sandwich, and then you go to Stop and Shop and get a sandwich, one you paid sales tax and one you didn't, because mm-hmm. one is a restaurant, right, mm-hmm. and the other is a grocery store. So that has been since 2002. This budget was supposed to take that 6.35% sales tax and increase it to 7.35%. That's all it was supposed to do. Now, we did not support that to begin with. Let me make that clear. Not one Republican voted for the budget.
Right.
However, what they did a little sneaky maneuver, and they stuck in the words grocery store, which opened up a Pandora's box of anything in a supermarket to be defined as a prepared food. So what happened was the DRS commissioner, through no fault of his own, interpreted that law. And a couple weeks ago, you saw everyone get upset, rightly so, about the fact that there would be all these different things in a store that could have sales tax. For example, that sandwich we spoke about.
Mm-hmm.
If you got a soda with it, now that soda would be taxed, whereas otherwise it wouldn't be. They said that if you bought 5 muffins in a store, because they determined 5 would be for personal consumption,
mm-hmm.
who goes in their car and eats 5 muffins?
There's nobody.
Okay. But if you bought 6, that's for, you know, just regular, and you're going to take them home and eat them one a day.
That means we have 30 seconds, so go ahead.
And so we made it very clear that that's not how this is supposed to be. People cannot afford this. That was not how it was supposed to be. But the Democrats and the governor wrote that language. They signed that language, and they knew exactly what they were doing. The only reason they decided to change their mind was when the Republicans made a big deal about it, because the people in this state cannot take it anymore.
Thank you for the transparency. We really appreciate, and we appreciate you when you join us as well. Great to have you with us this morning, Themis Claridis.
My pleasure.